Good morning. I am Matt Tittle, and I'm honored to be here with you this morning. Thanks for having me. Our invocation words this morning are from W.E.B. Du Bois, who said, "Now is the accepted time, not tomorrow, not some more convenient season. It is today that our best work can be done, and not some future day or future year. It is today that we fit ourselves for the greater usefulness of tomorrow. Today is the seed time, now are the hours of work, and tomorrow comes the harvest and the playtime. Let us begin the work we do today in song." This morning I have a story for all ages. I'll ask the children and the young at heart who would like to come forward to hear the story to please come up. Story is called a fable, and fables have messages, and it was written by a person named Aesop. You know Aesop? Aesop. Okay. Aesop wrote lots of fables in ancient Greece. That's right. He lived about 2,000 years ago, or maybe a little longer, and this fable is called The Brave Mice. So, there was once an old cat who lived in a barn, and the cats thought that his job was to go around and to get rid of the mice. So he would chase the mice and eat the mice, and it made all the mice really afraid. So one day, the mice met, and they tried to figure out a way that they could get the cat to stop chasing them and eating them. And they thought of all these different ways that they could warn themselves that the mouse or that the cat was coming. One of them thought, well, let's see, if we sit up in the rafters of the barn and look down, we can always see where the cat is. Somebody thought, maybe we can follow the cat wherever it goes, sneak up behind him and make sure that we know where he is, and all kinds of different ideas. But there was an old gray mouse who everybody thought was really wise, really smart, and he said, "Here's what you have to do. You have to go get a bell and hang it around the cat's neck so that when the cat comes, we'll hear the bell ringing and we can run away and hide and the cat won't get us." All the mice thought that was a really cool idea. Yeah, that's a great idea. That's what we'll do. One of the mice even went out and got the bell and brought it back. And then the old gray mouse said, "Now, which of you will hang the bell around the cat's neck?" Oh, no. All of the mice ran away. None of them would do it, and they went and hid. And that's the end of the story. But it is. But the message of the story is that it takes one kind of courage to say that you're going to do something, and it takes a different kind of courage to actually do it. That real courage is in the things that we do and not just the things that we say. Well, you think of a new ending, okay? And we'll tell it later. Great. We'll be together in prayer, followed by a moment of silence. Amid the noise of our daily lives, we come together here for a few minutes of peace and clarity. Some of us today bring deep sadness. Some of us come bursting with joy. We all are in need of comfort. May each of us today and until we gather again be both loved and loving, lest we forget our purpose. May we always be able to offer ourselves to another with love and caring. May we always be able to receive the caring hand extended to us. Today I'd like to talk with you about integrity. And I'll start with a reading from early 19th century Universalist minister Hosea Ballou, which I believe illustrates a liberal religious understanding of integrity. Hosea Ballou said, "I know it is frequently contended that we ought to love God for what God is, and not for what we receive from God, that we ought to love holiness for holiness' sake, and not for any advantage that such a principle is to us. This is what I have often been told, but what I could never see any reason for or propriety in. I am asked if I love an orange. I answer, I never tasted of one. But then I'm told I must love an orange for what it is. Now I ask, is it possible for me to either like or dislike the orange in reality until I taste it? Well, I taste of it, and I like it. Do you like it, my friend says? Yes, I reply, its flavor is exquisitely agreeable. But that will not do, says my friend. You must not like it because its taste is agreeable. You must like it because it is an orange. If there be any propriety in what my friend says, it is out of my sight." The subject of integrity is a complex one, but I think at the same time quite simple, maybe like an orange. Everyone is for integrity. Everyone wants to have integrity. Everyone demands integrity from others. When something big is at stake or of ultimate importance, then we insist on integrity. We want our leaders to have impeccable character. We want corporations and governments and schools and the church to be institutions that are beyond reproach. But when it comes to the small things, well, then maybe it's okay to stretch the rules a little. We learn to fib rather than hold fast to our principles if we believe there might be some benefit or we don't think anyone else will suffer. The old adage of what they don't know won't hurt them is a familiar one. So what if I stretched the truth a little on my income taxes? So what if I was undercharged? So what if they gave me back too much change? So what if I speed just a little on Interstate 35? Nobody's getting hurt, are they? Integrity is easy to think about, but I believe it's more difficult in practice. Maybe we don't spend enough time figuring out how to have integrity. So I'm going to talk about four different aspects of living a life of integrity. These are wholeness, freedom as a fundamental value, acting on the courage of our convictions, and the willingness to take risks. Wholeness, freedom, courage, and risk. These are all central to integrity in our spiritual and personal lives. First, we'll talk about wholeness. By definition, integrity is the act of maintaining wholeness. It shares the same Latin root with the word integer, whole number. A person of integrity is a whole person. There's an interesting 19th century form of the word that I think illustrates this point. It's integralism, which means the belief that one's religious convictions ought to dictate their social and political actions. Integrating the religious, social, and political aspects of our lives. This is an example of maintaining wholeness. While we're thinking about definitions, I've often used the word integrous as an adjective to describe the quality of having integrity. But I've noticed that no one else ever uses this form. I love my home state of South Carolina, but I am the educational product of the South Carolina public school system, so I often question my own grasp of the English language. You won't find integrous in any American dictionary, but it is in the Oxford English Dictionary as an obsolete and rare form. How ironic or unfortunate that we don't have a commonly used adjectival form of integrity in English. So I'm going to continue using integrous in my hope that it comes back into our common vocabulary. So we have this first concept of wholeness. The second aspect of integrity, especially in liberal religion, is the concept of freedom. Freedom is at the core of Unitarian Universalism. We have emerged from the free church tradition, rejecting prescribed doctrines and creeds while simultaneously affirming freedom of religion, free belief, freedom of association. In 1960, on the eve of the consolidation of Unitarianism and Universalism in the U.S., Reverend David Park, a Unitarian historian and then minister of the Unitarian Church of Peterborough, New Hampshire, addressed the issue of integrity in Unitarian Universalism in a series of sermons and publications. He said that he had three concepts: faith, freedom, and fulfillment. He said that some of us find fulfillment in the fact that we are free. Others of us find fulfillment not in freedom, but in faith. For the first group, faith is the means to a life of integrity. Freedom is the end. For the second group, freedom is the means and faith is the end. Park said in 1960 that humanists fell into the first category, while Unitarian Christians fell into the second category, and he said that Unitarian Universalists, then a new breed, fell somewhere in between. Faith, freedom, and fulfillment. Three aspects of integrity for a liberal religious tradition, not unlike integralism and integrating the religious, social, and political aspects of our lives. The elegance of Unitarian Universalism is that we are not boxed into absolute categories when it comes to our faith or our freedom. This brings me to the third primary element of integrity, and the one that I think the mice struggled the most with: the courage of our convictions. We've addressed the essence of integrity, which is wholeness. We've addressed the core of integrity in liberal religion, which is freedom. The courage of our convictions addresses the question of how we live integrous lives. In his book titled Integrity, the only one that I know of completely dedicated to the concept, Stephen Carter explains that living an integrous life — he uses integral, but I like integrous better — living an integrous life requires discerning what we believe is right and what we believe is wrong. At the foundation of integrity is our value system. Value systems are represented by our emphasis on freedom, by our seven Unitarian Universalist principles, by the Torah and the Talmud of Judaism, by the gospel teachings of Jesus for the Christian, and so on, as each religious tradition has tried to discern that which is of utmost importance. Beyond knowing what we believe, integrity includes acting on our convictions, even at personal risk. Our own Unitarian Universalist principles are a covenant to affirm and promote. These are actions which we agree to take on. The courage of our convictions, in addition to knowing what we believe and acting on our convictions, includes articulating our faith, openly saying that we are acting on our understanding of right and wrong, even if saying so is unpopular. We must be willing to tie our actions to our principles and say, I'm doing X because I believe in Z. This is what I think Hosea Ballou was trying to illustrate in his example of loving an orange. He had to taste it first. We don't do things because we are told to do them or for the sake of doing them. Living with integrity means that we know and understand what we believe, have the courage to act on those beliefs, and are able to articulate our convictions even in the face of criticism and disagreement with others. I grew up mostly in Charleston, South Carolina, and in my teenage years I went to the Southern Baptist Church. I joined the Southern Baptist Church on my own because it offered more comfort and care than I was getting in an alcoholic home. I stopped going to the Southern Baptist Church when I was told by one of the deacons not to bring my black friend to church. After that, I spent many years being openly critical of Christianity. I felt its foundation was weak. But despite what one deacon had told me, when I truly came to understand what I believed many years later as a Unitarian Universalist, I realized that I could not, with integrity, dismiss Christianity or any other belief system that has as its basic assumption the goodwill of everyone, even if there was one misguided deacon. In more recent years, I've recognized that Christianity is central to the lives of my mother-in-law and father-in-law. Devout United Methodists, who are also the most integrous and service-oriented people that I know. I know what I believe and why. I act on my convictions. I let other people know why I'm doing so, but I must also hear and accept the differences of others' beliefs. So now we've expanded our definition of integrity beyond the idea of wholeness, beyond seeing integrity in our values of freedom, to the conviction in understanding right and wrong, acting on those convictions, and being able to articulate our faith. But we're not finished yet. I'd like to add the idea of risk-taking to our understanding of integrity, especially, again, as it relates to liberal religion. My experiences with risk-taking come not from liberal religion, but from an unlikely source, but I find a certain synchronicity in all of it. I've been keeping you in suspense with the title of the sermon, Watertight Integrity. I learned about risk-taking as a component of integrity in the Navy. I spent 11 years as an active-duty naval officer and recently retired from the Naval Reserve. 4.5 of my 20 years of service were aboard ships. In ships and submarines, watertight integrity is essential. Without it, the ship risks sinking. Each door and hatch is lined with a rubber seal all the way around, treated with petroleum jelly, and tested periodically for its watertight integrity. This ensures that when it's closed, there won't be any leaks into the next compartment in the event that one side is flooded. Some compartments are called voids, and they remain sealed all of the time so that the ship can float. In a submarine, this is a little bit trickier because they purposely fill the voids with water and then expel it so that the sub can dive and surface, and that's why I was never a submariner. We constantly trained in the Navy to ensure that our watertight integrity remained intact. During general quarters, that level of alert that we would go to when danger was imminent or trained for, all doors and hatches are closed and sealed, all of them. No one is allowed to move around the ship or to open any of the doors. We would time how long it took to reach condition zebra, meaning that everyone had reached their station and all watertight hatches and doors had been secured. There is a Navy ship somewhere right now going through this drill, I can guarantee you. They are testing their watertight integrity. But condition zebra is the most extreme condition in which we lock up everything and take no risks. We don't go to that condition of watertight integrity very often and don't stay in it for very long, just as long as we have to. So we also had condition yoke, X-ray, and modified zebra, all different degrees of watertight integrity. Each hatch was marked with an X, a Y, or a Z. Modified zebra was a Z with a circle around it. And they were allowed to be opened, depending on the marking, at certain times, and not allowed to be opened at other times. Just like in life. Sometimes we open doors and take calculated risks. Sometimes we keep them closed. Fundamentalist or conservative faiths might be considered to be more often in condition zebra, relying more on certainty and allowing for less risk. But I think they deny their wholeness in the very act of trying to maintain it. People don't function as well if they are constantly locked down. As believers in a liberal tradition, we allow for less rigidity in our knowledge and beliefs and are more affirming of others' beliefs. We take calculated risks, keep the doors open so that we can move around, but we need to have a keen understanding of why we're doing so and a plan for when we might tighten up a little bit. We often talk about integrity in terms of honesty, of right and wrong. We think of integrity in terms of shoulds and should nots, cans and can'ts. But we practice integrity in degrees. It isn't practical to stay in condition zebra all of the time. Part of integrity is attending to the rest of life and being whole, knowing what is going on around us and what watertight condition we're in at any given time. Integrity isn't a question of either or. It isn't a question of should or shouldn't, can or can't. It's more complex than that. Critics might say that this is a slippery slope, that it's moral relativism to explain away integrity as other than pure and certain. To them, I would respond that we can lock down every door. We can do as we're told, or we can live our lives paying attention to our wholeness, maintaining our commitment to freedom, having courage in our convictions, and knowing when to take risks, and to what degree. Know what you believe. Act courageously on those beliefs. Say publicly and without shame why you're doing so. Have the sense of awareness to know when to take risks, all the while maintaining your wholeness. if we do these things, perhaps we will all be more integrous people. May it be so.